Coming up on today's show,
I got a call from Rachel again, and she said, you can't tell anybody this because it's not common knowledge, but she said, I just got a call from my friend Kenny Greenberg, and he plays guitar in Chesney's band, and they're looking for a bass player.
Heavy metal mixtape, high top fixate, mean girl boyfriend, lunchroom lion den, lip gloss, first kiss, true love, near miss, new kid, bus stop, tape deck.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Las Vegas, my guest is a nationally touring bassist and vocalist currently performing with country superstar Kenny Chesney. She has over two decades of experience both on the road and in the studio, and has worked with bands of all musical genres, from rock to pop, blues, funk, bluegrass, country, and Americana. She has toured with Hank Williams Jr., Radney Foster, Bonnie Bishop, Holly Williams, and Louise Mandrell, splitting her time between her hometown of Austin, Texas, and Nashville. When she's not on the road with Kenny Chesney, she continues to tour and do session work with various artists around the country. You've been hearing a rough demo of a song she did called Truth or Dare 95. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Harmony Kelly.
Hi, everybody. Happy to be here.
Harmony, thank you so much for making time to do this, especially given you're currently being on the clock, so to speak.
All good. The timing actually worked out, but thank you for that wonderful intro. I'm impressed with myself.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And we're going to get to the being on the clock part, but first, just start us off by telling us about the song itself that was just playing, called Truth or Dare 95. And after you tell us about the song, then I'm going to ask you about the circumstances that led you into that. But just since I was talking over it and the audience couldn't hear the lyrics, what is Truth or Dare 95 about?
So it was part of a songwriting game where we had specific prompts for it. And for that particular one, if I'm remembering correctly, the prompt word was 13. You don't have to include the word 13. It can be about sort of you being 13. So I, you know, kind of went back to my days in the 90s. I'm aging myself here, which is totally fine. I'm not one of those women who doesn't like to talk about how old I am. But yeah, 1995. I think I was right around that, you know, 13, 14, 15 kind of range. So it was just sort of a song about being a kid, being a teen, you know, what that was like growing up and the games we were playing and relationships and dating and what that looked like back then. So experimenting with, you know, having a boyfriend or a girlfriend and, you know, kissing someone for the first time and all, you know, all the things, all the trials and tribulations of being a teen.
Of being 13, yeah. There's a great teaching moment here very early on, and I'm so glad that it has come up, because this does not come up very often at all on this show, which is the concept of writing to a prompt instead of what I'm going to call the traditional, the tried and true method. Just talk a little bit more about that, of somebody saying, okay, 13, do something with that. How easy or difficult is it versus writing in what I'm calling the traditional method?
You know what, for me, I'm going to say this, I have not considered myself to be a songwriter for many years. I, you know, came up as a bass player, and that's another thing. I didn't, you know, pick up a different instrument and then move to bass. You know, I've played bass. I started on bass. I still play bass. And throughout the last 20 years or so, I've sort of taken up, you know, learning guitar and teaching myself how to use Logic Pro and things like that. Some of it out of necessity. And, you know, you start doing remote sessions for people and recording a bass track for someone's song. So it was kind of that. But it was also this game kind of, I guess, circling back to your question, I really like the idea of a prompt, because for me, I didn't come upon songwriting organically, you know, years ago. And so for me, and I love writing, you know, when I was in high school, I went to a liberal arts high school in Austin, and it was really focused on creative writing. And I loved that. I loved writing fiction stories and poetry and things like that, but I never really got into the songwriting bit about it. So for me, it was great. It was almost like being, you know, in school again, where a teacher goes, okay, here's what your paper's about. And I go, great, my brain's already working, you know, and it's going to town. So for me, it was, I think the prompt kind of harkened back to a little bit of that, where I went, okay, great, I have a theme, and it can be, again, the word, you can mention it in passing. You don't have to mention the word, but it can be what your entire song is about. It's really this particular game. I know every songwriting game is a little different in their rules, but in this particular game, that word can take you anywhere, you know, so, and it's up to your interpretation. So I really liked that.
Yeah, this is turning into a wonderful teaching moment, because I think if there are young people listening who are just getting started and are saying, I thought I was creative, but I'm really struggling to get off the ground and get things moving with songwriting, maybe that's the better way to kind of put your toe in the water and say, okay, I'm going to try songwriting. And if someone gives me a prompt, sure, you know, because I otherwise am really struggling. So this is a great start. And so let's stay here then, before we get too far away from it. And since we were talking about Truth or Dare 95 and then the prompt that led to it, just tell us more about those circumstances, this songwriting game, by the way, as well as why you were thankful that you started into what ultimately resulted in that track.
So this is probably 3 years ago now. I was randomly at a party, a friend's birthday party, and I ran into another mutual friend who is a local Austin songwriter and piano player. He fronts his own band, but he also is a side musician as well for a bunch of people. And he and I have known each other for 20 plus years, and I hadn't seen him in a while. And he said, you know, this is in the fall. And he said, you know, what are you doing lately outside of touring? You know? And I was like, you know, I'm just here and playing with people and doing that whole thing. And he said, do you write songs? And I went, oh, I mean, yeah, I came up with all these reasons why I'm not a songwriter. And he said, well, I have a songwriting game. And I immediately got so anxious because I knew what was about to follow, you know? And I said, okay. And he said, we start in January. January 1, I release the prompts. And he said, you have 2 weeks to write each song, and we only do 4 songs. So it's, you know, for people who are super busy and have tours and lives and all that, it's January and February, and then we're done. And so he said, just think about it. And I went, okay. And so I thought about it and I thought about it. And then, you know, a few weeks went by, and he needed to know, you know, from everybody who was participating, you know, is it a yes or no? And so I wrote him and I said, okay, it's a very anxious, nervous yes, but I'm saying yes. And that those are the best yeses. So I kind of begrudgingly was a part of this. And then I realized, you know, and I don't really consider myself a guitar player. And so for me, it was like writing a song as a bass player was a little bit more complicated, because you don't have as much of the melodic, you know, chordal stuff, voicings going on. And throughout this process over the last few years, I started teaching myself how to write songs in Logic. You know, I borrowed this MIDI keyboard from my brother, and, you know, I would kind of create these drum loops on my own. And what I love to do is do a whole bunch of layering of vocals. And so I have a really great mic, and I would just come up with these, you know, really interesting harmony parts and layer myself on myself, and then play some real bass on some of these. And there's some synth bass, you know, where I'm just kind of using keys that I'm soloing on guitar, which again is not my forte, but you know, it's this cool, like really lo-fi, I think of, it's like B-52Z, Devo, like real kind of cool, gritty, pop, grungy stuff, you know? So I don't know. I'm digging it.
Very cool. Very cool. And I love the hesitancy on the yes. It makes me think of the movie Couples Retreat when Jason Bateman says to Vince Vaughn, "So I'm going to put you down as a firm and tentative maybe."
It's so great. That was exactly what it was. It was a firm and tentative maybe. Oh, that's funny.
But audience, again, for those of you that are finding this challenging, starting into this thing called the music business and songwriting, go back and listen to my interview way back on episode 290. The guest was Grace Askew. And at the time of the interview, she was in the midst of a 2-year songwriting challenge, which had started off as a song a day for 1 year. And as I just said, it turned into 2 years. And so there are these things out there, audience, such as the songwriting game that Harmony's talking about and the song a day thing that Grace Askew was doing that could be helpful resources for you to try out. Now, there's certainly going to be listeners who come to this episode of Now Hear This Entertainment because they are family members, friends, fans, followers of yours, Harmony. And to those folks, I say thank you. Welcome. Hello. Please check out some other episodes of the podcast. However, over my more than 11 years of doing this show, I have gotten listeners from 166 countries around the world, which means
wow. There
are people just getting introduced to you for the first time, Harmony. So for those folks, take us back to the early years and how you got started into playing music.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it's nice to virtually meet all of you. I hope I get to meet everybody in person at some point. I wasn't one of those kids that, you know, was in piano lessons when I was 7 or in choir. And, you know, my dad played guitar. He still plays a little bit, but he was in bands in Shreveport, Louisiana, which is where I was born, for a long time, many, many years. And, you know, he and my mom were younger parents. And so he was kind of still doing that thing when I was born. And then at some point we moved to Austin and he was still playing with a bunch of friends. But I also grew up in a house where, outside of my dad playing guitar in bands, my dad loved vinyl. So there's always a record player with records going on all the time. Mm. And so I grew up listening to like his music that he was always like the Beatles and the Band and Little Feet and Taj Mahal and, you know, Raya Cooter, stuff like that. And that a lot of my friends' parents may or may not have been listening to, but, so I don't know. I grew up in a really, a music household where it was always on, but nobody ever, you know, my dad even never said, "Hey, I'm going to teach you how to play guitar." Mm. And I never really asked, you know, that was one of those things where it's like, you don't want your dad to teach you how to play guitar. So at some point when I was in high school, a girlfriend of mine, it was one of those classic 80s movie moments where, you know, she was like, "We should start a band and I'll play guitar and you should play bass," you know, because for whatever reason, nobody ever wants to play bass. And now I'm like, God, everybody should want to play bass, you know.
What's the matter with
but
you?
But it seems like that's always the afterthought instrument, you know, like, oh, we still need somebody to play bass. So I was that person. So.
But so how did you pick it up then? Because if your dad didn't teach you guitar and this friend said, "Let's start a band and you should play bass," how did you learn?
The only way that I knew how to learn was to just play by ear. Because
wow.
Even my dad as a musician it's not like he was reading sheet music and he never went to music school and he never took lessons.
Wow.
It was all, it just kind of came about it real honestly and real, you know, just like, they're
self-taught.
Having fun in a band. And so I guess I learned that from him, maybe, you know. But I guess going back to the comment about the records that they were playing, they were all, to me, those bands were all really kind of rhythm section heavy bands, you know, where the bass and drums and keys were really prominent to me. Mm-hmm. And so I think as a kid, my ear maybe got used to kind of honing in on that part of the band, you know. And so when I sat down with a bass, I went to Ray Hennig's Heart of Texas Music, which sadly doesn't exist anymore in Austin, Texas, but it was this little music shop. And I told my parents that I wanted a bass for Christmas. And I think they both looked at me like I was crazy, but my dad and I went to this music shop and, you know, I picked out a bass. I didn't know anything about it. So, of course, it was based on the color. I think he put a little down payment on it or something, and they held it there until Christmas. And, you know, I got that and a little old PV TNT amp from the same shop. And I didn't really, like, I thought it was so great and so cool, but I didn't really know what to do with it, you know, because I wasn't taking lessons and my dad didn't really play. And so I just kind of sat in my parents' living room and I would pick out CDs. And at the time there was this great Jayhawks record called Hollywood Town Hall. This is probably in 1990, you know, I think they put it out in the early 90s, but around this time it was 96-ish, 95, 96, 97. And I would just sit and listen to that and kind of pick out, like, I didn't know the notes I was playing on the bass neck, but I could hear tonally, like, oh, that's what he's playing. And then I would start to notice patterns. And I had my dad get me this, one of those Mel Bay Learn to Play Bass books off of, you know, some music shop stand. And I opened it up and I didn't know how to read music at all. But there was this, in the middle of the book, there was this picture of the fretboard. And it showed kind of where all the notes occurred up and down the neck. And to me, I went, oh, wait, I can do something with this. Yeah. And my mom was really into arts and crafts. And so I went in and raided her craft drawer and got a bunch of a different color of construction paper. And I taped little tiny squares of construction paper all up and down the bass neck. And I picked out a color for each note. So I think E was blue and G was pink. And A was red, like it was something like that. And so, and then I could visualize, I'm a very visual person. And so to me, when I looked at the neck, I went, oh, I can see where all the notes are occurring. Yeah. And, you know, you start to notice patterns. And that was how I learned how to play bass.
So cool. Yeah, because that was at a time when there was no YouTube to just go and sit and watch videos.
That's right.
Wow. So creative. So creative. Audience, this episode is being released on Wednesday, May 21st. 2 weeks from tomorrow, which will be Thursday, June 5, I will be in Quincy, Illinois, speaking on Friday the 6th, too, by the way, at the Indies United Publishing House's Authors Retreat. If you or someone you know are or will be in the area, please get in touch so we can meet in person. You heard Harmony saying, I wish I could meet all of you. That's why I say this every week. I'm always eager to meet face-to-face with people who make time to listen to the show, so I can say a personal thank you for that. I am currently looking at something in July, too, so keep listening to the podcast, reading the weekly e-newsletter, following on Instagram, so as to get those details once I have them set. It would be great to meet you out on the road somewhere to express my gratitude for your listening to Now Hear This Entertainment. Harmony, there is one particular band, though, one particular player that you cite as the reason you started playing bass. Go ahead with the reveal, but then just continue what you were saying about being drawn to the bass, because, you know, I think as a young listener, you're drawn to, let's say, the melody or maybe the harmonies, but I think the natural reaction is to always be drawn to the lead singer, the person that's getting all the attention, the person that's getting out front. So I'm fascinated by you having such an ear where you were able to pick out certain sections and certain instruments and not considering the other members of this band you're about to say or their instruments. So please go ahead.
If you knew me personally, you would probably know that my personality is very much, I would say, I think of myself as more of a supportive role, a supportive person. I'm a helper. I'm a fixer. I guess I'm an extroverted introvert, some might say, which I think that happens to a lot of musicians, which is surprising to some people. So I think the bass really makes sense to me and to my personality. I don't know if I chose it or if it chose me, one of those, you know, classic conversations, but so when I was in high school, that same friend who said, hey, we should start a band, she and I were best friends, and she got me into this band Guns N' Roses. And this was at the time of kind of, you know, hair bands and metal and stuff like that. And we were just kind of obsessed with this band. And that was our posters all over the wall and, you know, whatever. And so it was a very high school moment where she had a crush on Axl. That was her guy. That's the lead singer in the band. And for those of you who don't know the ins and outs of Guns N' Roses, she was really into Axl. And so she thought, I'm going to I'll front the band. And she also kind of wanted to play guitar, and she was writing. And I, for whatever reason, was really drawn to Duff McKagan, who is their bass player. And he's kind of this like commanding presence, but also like tall, kind of quiet, but really cool and really like just a rock and roll guy, but didn't need to be the center of attention, you know? And there's something about that that really appealed to me. Mm. And I was like, man, that's really cool. Like, did I, as a young female with raging hormones, have a crush on that guy? Yes, definitely. You know, he was my guy. But I think there was also a part of it that was like, I think I could do that. I kind of want to do that. It was one of those moments where she said, you know, you have a crush on Duff. You should play bass. And I went, okay, this sounds great. I would love to be like one of my heroes or my idols. But the funny thing is, so that was my reason for picking up the bass, I guess. But my playing style, even from way back then to now, what has nothing to do with the way that Duff plays. You know, he plays with a pick, and he has this really low slung bass, and he plays a lot of coarse effect pedals and stuff like that. So that's not really me as a player, but I really attribute sort of his vibe and personality and sure. style and my crush, you know, to sure. the reason why I decided to pick up bass. But it is kind of funny because my bass heroes, you know, in style are kind of different people. You know, they're not Duff, but yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to see once you're drawn to a particular member of a band, how you could all of a sudden, now your ear automatically is going to go to what they're doing. And I've made no secret over the years that my all-time favorite band has always been Rush. And if you're drawn to Geddy's vocals, now you're going to also start paying attention to, well, what is Geddy doing bass-wise? And as much as Alex has great guitar solos, and as much as Neil always was, in my opinion, the best drummer of all time, if you're just listening for the bass going on in a busy Rush song where in their later years they really started to add a lot of other instrumentation into it, you can clearly hear what Geddy's doing on the bass. So in your case, it's like, well, yeah, let's admit it. He's kind of cute. I kind of like him. And now I'm going to listen to what he's doing. And you go, you know what? I kind of like that section of the music. I kind of like that section of the band. I'm starting to feel some inspiration here musically that I can try to duplicate that. And then, as you said, go off and do your own Harmony Kelly bass style.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's 100% correct. He is a lovely person, by the way. I had a chance to meet him one time, and I think I cried. But he's wonderful, and I've heard really great things about him. And he's, you know, written a book or two, and, you know, talks about being a dad and getting sober. And he, interestingly enough, has a similar story. Like, he kind of is a self-taught bass player as well. And I think at some point in his 40s, I think he decided to take music lessons or something like that. So I went, see, there's a reason why I like this guy.
Now, back in the intro, I said that you split your time between Austin and Nashville, and I don't know if the audience caught it. You said it very quickly. You were actually born elsewhere. So just say again where that was, but then also about some of the many opportunities you got to play before you ever even moved to Nashville.
So I was born in Shreveport, Louisiana. Both of my parents are kind of from that area. And then my dad's family lived right across the Texas line there in a very, very, very small town. I mean, maybe 1,000 people. I don't really know. Mm. So they were young parents, and my dad was looking for work around that time. And so after I was born, they kind of, I think they thought, oh, there are more opportunities in Austin. So they picked up and moved down to, and they were kind of like young hippies. My dad was a musician, you know, Austin. You know, growing up in Northeast Texas and Shreveport, it's a little bit different of a vibe than Austin was, especially at that time. Sure. It was this really cool, small college town, young, a lot of music. And, you know, so they moved back and forth a couple of times. But yeah, we moved back to Austin full time when I started middle school. So I went to elementary school in a very, very small country, rural Texas town. Mm. And then they moved to Austin, and I was there ever since. And so after I picked up the bass in, you know, late high school, I kind of had a couple of like high school bands and played with my dad a little bit, which was an interesting learning experience on some small stages in Austin. And then at some point, I don't even know, I kind of joined this band when I was in my early 20s, and we're all still very, very close. But that was one of those bands that thought, you know, we were in a storage unit in Austin, like practicing. We had posters and Christmas lights up, and, you know, we were going to be the rock and roll band. And it was super fun, and we played a ton of cool festivals and stuff like that. But then everybody kind of went their separate ways, and people got married and had kids and all that. So, but I don't really know. It's funny. Like, at some point, I was playing gigs in Austin, slowly, slowly kind of working my way up through the food chain there. And I remember I played a gig, a really small gig, with this drummer friend of mine. And I don't know, for any musicians, and especially bass players and drummers out there, when you play with somebody who, like, gets you, you know, and it's not even like a personality thing. It's a, where do you put the downbeat, and where's your kick pedal landing? Where, you know, how is she playing bass around this drum pattern that I'm doing? Like, that's a really, really special relationship between a bass player and a drummer. And so, and I had never really felt that before until I played with this particular person. And so after we played these small gigs, he kind of said, I got to get you on some more gigs. And he was he's older than I am, and was playing with a bunch of different bands around Austin. And I went, okay. And so I was wandering around this bass shop in Austin, and he called me one day and he said, what are you doing this weekend? And I said, I don't have anything. And he goes, great. You're going to sit in for this gig with this guy, John D. Graham, who I knew who he was and was exceptionally intimidated by him. And, you know, you're going to do this gig because our bass player, Andrew, has another commitment. So, and I went, okay, well, is there a set list? And, can you send me the songs? And can you, you know, he goes, yeah. Okay. And he kind of laughed. And he ended up giving me a bunch of CDs, because that's how we sort of shared music at the time. And I said, okay, great. What about a set list? And he just kind of gave me this funny look. And he goes, well, there's not really a set list. Mm. And I went, oh, okay. Well, and I was I like to be organized, and I like to know the plan. And I was really, really that way as a musician back then, because I was just so afraid of making a mistake or looking foolish or not knowing what was going on. Yeah. So I needed to prepare, you know, and this gig was not that, you know. I ended up, you know, that gig happened, and it was so terrifying and scary, and and they were all lovely. And John D. Graham ended up being kind of a mentor to me for many years because of that. Like, the just the approach that he had to, you know, you don't have to be perfect. Like, this is rock and roll, you know, and if you're going to make a mistake, make it loud, like, be confident, play with courage, you know, and it was great. And not that, you know, he wanted me to just, you know, be a train wreck for the entire gig, play errant notes, but it was kind of this interesting lesson in sort of letting go of the need for perfection and stepping outside of myself and just sort of being in the moment. And he really taught me to play with, you know, use your ears. Like, listen and watch, and you don't need to look at notes and a set list and worry about what's happening. Be in this moment right now, you know? And I have taken that little nugget of wisdom with me through my entire, you know, 20 plus years of playing, you know, and it doesn't always work, but really is a special thing to learn, you know?
So cool. And there's something about that story. And as I'm listening to you and I'm thinking about what I'm about to say, I'm thinking, there's been an awful lot of bass players on this show. I'm thinking about the bass player for Pink, the bass player for Pat Benatar, the bass player for, in this case, Vale Johnson, last November audience, episode 560. I'll put a link so you can go back and listen to that. He was telling a story, like you just heard Harmony say, about how, you know, you got to be prepared, because even a gig that you think, like, this is nothing, you never know who's going to be there. And sure enough, Kenny G came in to see him, because Kenny G's drummer had seen this band that Vale was playing with and went back and told Kenny G, you got to go see this guy play. And Kenny went and saw Vale play and said, yeah, let's bring him in. So great lessons here from Harmony. There's something that I want to dig into relative to when you did actually move to Nashville, Harmony, which was that you got the opportunity to play with Hank Williams Jr., yet you say you're thankful it didn't pan out.
Yes, I did. I I had been living in Austin and just playing as a musician, playing as, you know, the sideman musician, playing with a bunch of different bands. I think at some point I was in like 10 different bands in Austin, just trying to make it, working a part-time job and, you know, doing all the things you do to sort of make the dream happen. And Nashville had always been this sort of mystery that people talked about, especially in Austin. And it was, you know, there are towns that people move to try to make it in music. And I think, you know, LA is one of those. So a lot of people moved to New York. And then Nashville seems to be another place where people go. And Nashville was always a little bit more accessible because it was like, okay, it's close by. It's a much smaller town than Austin, which has always been surprising to me because of the level of music industry that's happening there and big tours that are leaving out of that town. But it is a pretty small town. And I had always had this, you know, kind of curiosity about Nashville, but it, as a musician, it's really hard to pick up and move your life to a different city, especially if you're trying to pursue that thing that everyone in that city is already pursuing, you know? And so it was always a thing that I was curious about, but I never had a gig to take me there. So I had never really gone. And I had another, a really good friend of mine who I actually have a podcast with now. We've been friends for, I don't know, 20 plus years. And she had moved to Nashville and she was kind of had laid the groundwork about 5 or 6 years before. And she and her husband were kind of splitting time between Austin and Nashville, but she would go out there and do sessions and they'd bought a place there. And so she had gotten a gig with Hank Williams Jr. And I think she had been playing with him for a few years at this point, but she called me one day and she said, I can't really say anything for sure yet, but she said, I'm doing this gig with Hank. As you know, we're about to, you know, embark on this tour. And she was like, I just found out I'm pregnant and this is her first baby. They now have three kiddos. But she said, I, you know, was supposed to do this tour with him. And she said, at the time that this tour starts, I'll be, you know, 7 months pregnant. And she's like, it's one of the loudest stages I've ever played on. Oh, she's like, there's no way I can do this, you know, pregnant. And then shortly after. So she said, I know you've been talking about moving to Nashville. If I can sort of okay it with the band leader and the band and, you know, all the powers that be, you'd have to move to Nashville. You'd have to be here for, you know, maybe 7 or 8 months. And while I would be kind of like a maternity leave, but she's like, it's a win-win, you know? And I went, oh my gosh. So I was like, I feel like this is the thing I need to do, you know? So I picked up my life in Austin and I think I even sold my house, moved out to Nashville, rented a little place, and then ended up buying a place out there. But I played a gig with Hank at Stagecoach at that big country music festival out in Indio, California, where they do Coachella.
Yeah.
There's a big country music fest that happens out there. And that gig ended up being, I think, in April. And I wasn't supposed to pick up the tour until June. And Rachel, she had played a gig with them, you know, early on in her pregnancy, like 3 months or so. And she's like, we have this last gig in April that I'm supposed to play before this break until the tour starts when you would take over. And she was like, I don't think I can do it. She said, I had to sit down on stage. Like,
oh,
it was
boy.
So uncomfortable for me. It was so loud. She's like, I'm worried that, you know, the volume level is going to do something bad to, you know? And so she was really worried about that. And so she said, I know it's, and this was coming up in like a number of weeks. And she said, I know it's early, but would you want to come out and do this gig before you pick up the tour? And at this point she had okayed, like, hey, my friend Harmony is going to come do this. And everybody's like, great, great, you know, whatever. Supposedly Hank knew about this and everything was fine. And so anyway, I played the show in India with them and I was so nervous. I mean, this was, you know, the biggest gig I'd ever played. And we didn't, there was no rehearsal. I met the band in the hotel lobby when I landed. You know, we met and then we went over to line check and oh my gosh, I was terrified. And, you know, Hank is, his set lists are non-set lists. You know, he can sort of, there's a framework, but he kind of can meander and he might go into this one song, but you don't really know it until you hear him start playing.
Wow.
And so it was really a kind of a scary moment for me, but it I nailed it. And I don't often say like, yeah, it was seamless. It was great. You know, but that was one that I went, yes. And there were high fives. You know, we finished the show, went off stage, the band was high fives. Everybody's like, you did great. We're so excited that you're going to be here this summer. Like, we love Rachel, but we're so happy to have you. You know, it was a lovely, lovely situation. And so I went, great. Ah, okay. I feel good about everything. So I went home, you know, knowing that, okay, I'm going to see these guys in a few months to, you know, to start this tour. And I think I was on the road. I played with this band Fastball for a number of years, and I was on the road with Fastball in Boston, and I got a call from the road manager, who's this lovely, sweet person named Charlie, and for Hank. Yeah. And I answered and I said, hey, Charlie, how's it going? You know, and looking forward to seeing you guys soon. And he just had this super somber tone to his voice, and my heart sank. Because I knew, like, this is not, something is not right. You know, my gut, my intuition said, oh, no, this is not going to be good. And he said, Harmony, I don't know how to tell you this, so I'm just going to say it. He said, first of all, I need you to know that it has nothing to do with you. It has nothing to do with your playing. The band is not happy about this situation, but it's not up to anybody but Hank. So he said he's having this woman who played bass before Rachel stepped back into the scene. And so it ended up being a situation where that was the only gig I played, was the Stagecoach gig. And I never picked up any of the other tours. And my friend Rachel never stepped foot back in the gig again, because this woman kind of got the gig. And as I mentioned, it's one of those sort of blessing kind of things. I was heartbroken and was moving to Nashville, you know, picked up my whole life, moved to Nashville thinking that I have this gig, you know, and everybody that I knew in Austin was, she's going to Nashville to do the thing, you know, she did it, she made it. And then I had to kind of tail between my legs, like, oh, well, it didn't work out. And no musician wants to feel like they lost a gig because of the way that they played, you know, or that they did something. And even though the powers that be kind of told me that wasn't the case, it's really hard to not have that feeling. And I stuck around in Nashville and I met a ton of people, and I just kind of got together with people and had lunch and told them my stories. And I had so many people that said, oh, sister, you dodged a bullet. Let me tell you, like, I know your heart broken, and I know that you think that this is going to be the thing, but you know, trust
plot
me,
twist.
You know, and it
plot
was either
twist.
From people who had played with him or who, you know, knew people who played with him, but they were like, you don't want that gig. You're fine.
Wow. Fascinating. And audience, if you never heard my interview with Buck Johnson, he is the keyboard player for Aerosmith. Go back and listen to that. I'll put a link to that one as well, because he talked about the exact same situation that Harmony just described, where it's no rehearsals. You're getting on the plane, you're meeting the band and showing up and going, hey, and like, oh, by the way, did you learn every single song in their catalog? Because it's kind of fair game. And I want to do justice to the bass players I was referring to. Mick Mahan is the bass player for Pat Benatar. Eva Gardner is the bass player for Pink. And I wanted to mention Justin Bilton, in the bass player for Three Doors Down. They've all been on this show. We need to turn to what everyone wants to hear, which is the Kenny Chesney gig. But first, let me just quickly reset. I'm joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Las Vegas by nationally touring bassist and vocalist Harmony Kelly. Visit her official website at harmonykelly.com. I will put a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. At the bottom of her website, you will see links for Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Plus, it's been a bit, but she even has some music posted over the years on SoundCloud, which you'll see a link for. And that, of course, is one of the platforms that the show is available on. There is a website out there called soundbetter.com through which you can find Harmony on and make contact to inquire about possibly hiring her to work on your next project. In the meantime, look for her performing as part of Kenny Chesney's residency at the Sphere in Las Vegas starting tomorrow night, Thursday, May 22nd, the first of 15 dates out there. I need to stop and say a personal thank you to Christian St. Martin, a listener who was kind enough to buy me three coffees upon having listened to episode 579. In fact, Christian wrote a message that said, quote, "Thank you for your amazing interview with the beautiful Jess. She is my all-time favorite," end quote. If you go on my podcast website, nhte.net, you will see a bright yellow button that says buy me a coffee. That's what I'm referring to that Christian did in being kind enough to buy me three coffees and send that note. If you too are enjoying what I'm doing on this show every week, that is a fun way to express such and for us to engage with each other a bit. Again, just go to the podcast website, nhte.net, and use the bright yellow button that says buy me a coffee. Harmony, you were talking about things not panning out with Hank Williams Jr., but wow, they sure have more than panned out with Kenny Chesney. Tell us the story about how you ever even got that opportunity in the first place.
It's a similar story in that it involves my friend Rachel, which, and another pregnancy. I hope she's okay with me saying this. I know. but yeah, all of her lovely family apparently is a good reason why I keep getting the nod to go to these auditions and have these opportunities. But so, yeah, I stayed in Nashville and I lost this gig and I ended up staying. I wasn't sure how long I was going to stay at that point, but I stayed for another, I think, year and a half. I was there in total for about 5 years, four or five years. And so a year and a half or so went by and I was getting ready to sort of like go, well, okay, Nashville didn't work out. That's okay. I'm going to go back to Austin and, you know, whatever. And so I got a call from Rachel again, and she said, if a Nashville number calls you in over the next, I think it was a week, answer the phone. She was like, you can't tell anybody this because it's not common knowledge. But she said, I just got a call from my friend Kenny Greenberg. And he plays guitar in Chesney's band, and they're looking for a bass player. And he was throwing my name into the hat. Everybody in the band is throwing a name in the hat, and I was his choice. And I am now pregnant with my second baby, so there's no way that I... And she didn't really want... Rachel was kind of shifting more into less being on the road and more session work, and then she eventually got into producing and stuff like that. So she was really... It was not a moment where she was really bummed out by not being able to say yes to this gig. So she was like... And she had been so heartbroken and devastated by the fact that I lost... She wasn't really sad that she lost the gig because she was kind of... I think she was ready to move on. Mm-hmm. But she was sad for me that she had sort of set up this plan for me to take over for her in the Hank band. And then it sort of completely imploded. She was really, really sad about that. So even though I was like, this is so not on you, trust me, there are no hard feelings there. So I'm just happy to have the nod. So she was able to sort of throw my name into the hat for this. And I got a call. She told her friend Kenny, like, hey, listen, I can't do this for various reasons. But she said, you have to call. Please throw my friend Harmony's name in the hat. You know, this is who she is. This is who she's played for. This is what happened. And so they did. And I ended up getting a call from the band leader a week later, I think. And we had a lovely conversation. He's also originally from Texas. He's from Arlington. So we had some Texas hometown stuff to talk about. And I got called in to, I think we had lunch first. This is how serious they are about making sure that the person is the right person and not just the right player. I was replacing potentially somebody who had been in the band for about 20 years. And so it was really, really important that they made the right decision. And so I ended up going to lunch one day with some of the band members just to kind of meet me and feel me out before I even went in for the audition. And so I kind of passed that test. And then I got called into audition with just the band. And there's so many interesting, funny moments about that and just kind of me showing up. They'd sent me the six songs and there were background vocals on a few of them. And I had realized through listening to them before I went to the audition that some of the songs were, I'm like, okay, these are played on a five string, which I had never played before. I was a four string player and I knew that the five string bass was kind of a Nashville thing. Could be modern country, gospel, R&B, but it was not something that I was familiar with. And so I went, oh man, I think I got to figure this out. And so I borrowed a five string bass from my friend Chris Autry in Nashville and just said, hey, can I borrow this? I've got to do this audition. And I just kind of want to mess around with this for a couple of weeks, you know, so that I don't look like so much of a fish out of water. So I practiced on that for a while. And then the day of the audition, think I rented one from SIR or something, and went in with a 5-string, and the monitor guy was in there, and he said, "Hey, do you have your own in-ears?" And I went, "Oh, no." And he could see this sort of look of, you know, horror on my face. And he went, "It's okay. It's okay. We've got these generics, and I'll plug you into this. You're going to be wearing a pack." And I'd never used in-ears. I'd never, you know, this is a whole new world that I was walking into in the audition for Kenny Chesney, you know.
Now, was Kenny there or just the band?
He was not there for the first one. It was just the band.
Okay.
And they were shuttling maybe 5 different bass players in. We never saw each other, but it was a different time block. They were bringing different bass players in, and the band was there, and you had to learn the same, you know, 6 songs and sing, and they were recording it, like, on an iPhone.
Mm.
And they sent all the auditions to Kenny.
I see.
And then from those 4 or 5 auditions, he picked one person that he wanted to come back in and audition with. And so he picked me, and I think I might have been the only female bass player. I believe I was. I know a couple of the other guys that, you know, were called in at this point. But I went in with him a couple weeks later, and after I got the gig, and he did it in this really, really cute, fun, now I know him, you know, after being in the band for 10 years, and, like, he's a little bit of a jokester, loves to be funny, loves pranks. And so he knew kind of how nervous I was, and he kind of knew that I had not done a big gig like this before. And so I went in for the audition with him. You know, we got through the first song, we got, like, halfway through the second song, and he stopped the audition. He went, "Wait a minute, band guys, can we just come outside for a second?" He's like, "Well," so they left me on stage. They went outside in the hall for like 5 or 10 minutes. And it's just me in there with a couple of the crew guys. And I'm going, "Oh God, I blew it. What did I do? You know, like, is it really that bad? Like, we didn't even make it through all 6 of these songs."
Wow.
And he came back in, and it was this whole production. And he was like, "We just wanted to make you sweat a little bit. Like, you got the gig." And I went, "Oh my God." And I mean, it was such a crazy experience to walk into that world where I felt like I really didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
And I was certain that because of all the protocol and the logistics and the important things that I was supposed to know how to do, that I wasn't going to get the gig, you know. And it
so
turns out
cool.
that it wasn't about any of that.
Wow.
You know?
Wow. Now, talking about the band, I remember way back on episode 248 when my guest was Chris Donahue, the bass player for Emmylou Harris, among many, many others that he's played with. That backing band calls themselves the Red Dirt Boys. Similarly, Harmony, Rosie and the Revival is the Kenny Chesney Band's side project. Later on, we're going to actually play a Rosie and the Revival song. But for right now, just talk about how all that came to be, meaning the band's music actually getting out.
It was kind of this surprising thing. We, you know, when we are on the road with Kenny and we're playing at football stadiums, we will go in and load in on the Friday before and do a big sound check, and then we'll do the show on that Saturday. And so Fridays are usually, once everybody gets loaded in, the crew is there. Our stage manager, Tom, usually has a grill. He's cooking burgers. He's cooking brats. Like, it's kind of ends up being like, when the crew's done, we'll sound check. It ends up being kind of a fun Friday, which is, our crew is incredible. It's amazing. And so in that sound check, you know, we kind of started doing some cover songs and some fun stuff that, you know, and Kenny's rarely there for some of these. And so the crew wants to hear, you know, some fun cover songs. And I will reverse back really quickly to my very first year with Kenny, which was 10 years ago. He wanted to do an AC/DC song in the set somewhere. He had been watching some live, you know, from Brazil videos of AC/DC. And he came in that year and said, "I want to do an AC/DC song." You know, and so we ended up doing a whole lot of Rosie. And and we tried it a couple different ways. And then at some point he was like, "Oh, maybe Harmony, you should come up and, like, sing the choruses with me." And I was like, okay. And this is my first year with him, and I had no idea. And then at some point he goes, "You know what? You should sing it."
Wow.
And I thought he was joking, and I laughed. And he goes, "No, I'm serious. You should sing it. Like, it'll be so unexpected. Like, a woman singing an AC/DC song, like, come on." And so that whole first year and into the second year, I, in the middle of the set, would come up to the front of the stage on the center mic and sing Whole Lotta Rosie. And
so
he would
cool.
come up and sing the choruses with me. And so I think it sort of started morphing from that, because we had a live recording of us doing that song that ended up getting played on his Sirius XM channel. And people loved it.
Wow.
And I mean, it surprised me, really, sort of this kind of more of a shy wallflower when it came to stuff like that. And then suddenly I'm belting out this rock song in the middle of a football stadium, you know? And so, yeah, when we started doing these sound checks, we'd record them, and then we were like, our sound engineer would start mixing them. And then we were like, these are really good. And Kenny was really kind of the force behind doing this. He goes, you should record a record. He was like, I want to help you guys do this, and I want to put some of these songs on Shoes Radio.
Wow, that's so
and
cool.
And so, yeah, it just kind of became a thing, and it's been super fun.
I'm saying that's so cool, but that's so nice of him. And one more story. There is so much stargazing that goes on with A-listers, so it's neat to hear that and when it can happen for and with one of their own band members. Late last July, Harmony, y'all were performing in Denver, and you get called up onto Kenny Chesney's bus. Tell the audience that story relative to not only who you got to meet, but who made it happen and then even took the photo of you and this person I'm referring to.
Oh my gosh. So being from Louisiana, even though I'm not from New Orleans, my brother's wife, my sister-in-law, and her whole family, they're all from New Orleans. So during football season, we all get together and watch Saints games, and we're big Saints fans, and we love New Orleans, and we love Louisiana culture and food and music and all that. So I have been a Saints fan for a long time, and because of that, I'm a fan of Sean Payton, who coached the Saints for many, many years.
Yeah.
And I've actually gotten to meet him before, but it's been a really long time ago. And so we played in Denver, and I got a text from, I think it was Kenny, and he said, hey, can you come out to my bus real quick? And this was like the show day. And I went, okay. Yeah. He's like, yeah, it just like 10 minutes. And I'm like, okay. So I went, got a little golf cart ride, went out to his bus, and he's having like, there's a ton of people. He has this whole area blocked off by his bus. So there were a bunch of friends and family there. And so I was out there, and then the door opened, and he goes, come here, just real quick. I went, okay. So I went up on the bus, and there, standing on Kenny Chesney's bus, is Sean Payton. And I went, oh my gosh, you're here. And of course, he's coaching for the Denver Broncos these days, but I still love him. And I actually love the Broncos, so it works out well. But yeah, he had a Denver Broncos helmet, an official helmet there that he had signed to me. And I was so excited and like shaking. And then Kenny, of course, was like, I got to get a picture of you guys. I'm like, this is a surreal moment where I'm on Kenny Chesney's bus, about to play a show with him at Mile High Stadium, and one of my favorite football coaches is here with a football helmet, and Kenny Chesney's taking our photo. Like, you can't make this stuff up.
Yeah, what a great boss. That story is great to hear for that reason, because for him to do all that for you really says a lot, and obviously he values everything that you've done over the last 10 years. Audience, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention him. I'm also going to put a link to an interview that I did with Tracyon Martin. She currently plays with Mad Apple. It's one of the Cirque du Soleil shows in Las Vegas. If you've never heard lessons about, and Harmony has mentioned this a couple times, subbing in for somebody, Tracyon did some real good lessons on that episode about the fact that it's just a part of the business. It's a part of life. So make sure you go back and listen to that, especially if you're an up-and-comer and you're nervous about having to sub out sometime. Harmony, you say that you have dreams of releasing an EP of your original pop tunes at some point. Tell us about that.
I do. Yeah. Through that songwriting game that we mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, I think it sort of surprised me, the songs that were coming out of me, because something really different happened when I kind of opened myself up to the synthy pop world that writing songs in Logic Pro was bringing to me. That, you know, sitting in a room with an acoustic guitar, it was just a different vibe, you know? And so I was sort of realizing for me that the songs that I wanted to, I love pop. And I don't think I realized how much I loved pop music. I love, you know, I love Taylor Swift. I love Chappell Roan. I love David Bowie. I love Prince. I really love that stuff. And I don't think I realized that if I were to write songs that they could be in that vein, you know, and then mixed in with, like I said before, some cool B-52s, Devo, kind of a little bit of punky, grungy garage kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, when I started writing these tunes for the songwriting game, I was kind of surprised at what I was creating and the melodies that I was coming up with and the hooks. And so I went, you know, and my boyfriend, Sean, said, you know, you should, you should consider putting out, you know, a record or an EP. Of course, he thinks I should be playing songs and, you know, all this stuff. He's one of my biggest fans for sure.
Yeah.
But I went, well, I think I will. So I have a few friends in Austin who are in the pop world, and they're producers and writers. So I thought,
awesome,
man, I'm going to maybe work with them to do it. But it's really just about jumping off the ledge, you know, jumping off into the deep end and just seeing what happens, because you can live your life in fear,
yeah.
which I do a lot, you know, but what if it's not good? And that's,
well,
one of my fears.
But I'll give the 25 words or less version, because we have two final questions and I have to let Harmony go because she needs to get to rehearsal. But there's a friend of mine here who was writing a book and kept talking about this book that he's going to release. And finally, his friend said, this is getting ridiculous. Like, when is he just going to finish this and get it out? So his friend put on Facebook, hey, everybody, we're having a release party for Chris's book on such and such a date at this place. Please come that night. This is what time it's going to start. And Chris went, holy bleep.
Oh my God.
I guess I got to finish the book and get it out now. So I hoped that Harmony and I would become friends because of this, but we're not going to now, because she's going to go, thanks, Bruce. Now my friends are going to do that for me and say, Harmony's EP release party is happening on November 30th. Audience, believe it or not, after all that you've heard, Harmony is currently in graduate school too. Oh my gosh.
I'm in grad school.
Wow. How and when do you get the time for that?
I don't know. Right now, I just finished my first semester. And I, of course, because of kind of my tour schedule and rehearsal schedule, this all has to be done kind of online remotely.
Sure.
So it's a very small school in Texas. This particular graduate program is an asynchronous remote program.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really the only way that I could do this. But yeah, I, you know, and I'm not leaving music. Don't worry, everybody.
This is kind of a,
you know, you think about when you get to be middle age, you start to think about what you want your next chapter to look like, you know? And so I just was kind of thinking like, gosh, what if I could reinvent myself, you know, or if I could choose another thing that really lights me up, that wasn't like a back burner thing. Cause a lot of, you know, growing up in my 20s as a musician, it was always like, well, what if music doesn't work out? Then I got to have this thing to fall back on. And it turns out music did work out and is working out. And I'm driven to want to do these other things in addition to music, you know? So I was talking about my kind of helping personality and my kind of, I think of myself as an empath and a helper and a nurturing kind of person. So I ended up going to grad school to get my master's in clinical mental health.
Nice.
And hopefully at some point we'll get my, become an LPC, which is a licensed professional counselor,
wow,
which, you know, a lot of people would say that I'm an unlicensed, unpaid therapist right now already being in a band. But, so, you know, we as musicians and humans in general, I think we struggle sometimes, you know, and, it's okay to get help. And, I have leaned on therapy for a big part of my life, and my mother passed away when I was very young suddenly. Mm. And that was my first experience with therapy, so it has been a big part of my life. So this may be a way to give back or sort of utilize my decades of experience in therapy myself.
Very nice. Audience, we're not going to have time for me to ask Harmony to talk about all the gear that she uses, so do go on her website. You will find a whole page that lists all that. In the meantime, we're going to close with a song from Rosie and the Revival, the Kenny Chesney Band's side project that Harmony talked about. It's a track called Just Getting Started. Before I let you go and we play that, Harmony, share with the audience first all about this one, including what the song is about. Do you, quote unquote, just play on it? Do you sing on it? Did you do any of the writing? Tell us about Just Getting Started.
This particular song, we've co-written a bunch of songs on this record with some of the band and then all of the band. And actually, we have some songs that we've all written that didn't make it on this record. So we're working on tunes for our next project, our next record as well. This was one that I wasn't sitting in the co-write, but it's maybe everybody in the band but me, or maybe there's a couple members. It says in the track, I should know this before I... in this songwriter named Moose.
Is it Jim Moose Brown?
Yes, yes, it is indeed. And I think he's getting ready to go back out on the road for the first time in like decades. And so he was talking to some of the guys about that. But yeah, he's a wonderful writer, and we've never met, but he recently told the guys, he's like, I really want to get together and write with Harmony. And I want to write with him as well, because this song was like, oh man, this is right up my alley to sort of sing and feel and vibe out. And yeah, it's really great. So I'm looking forward to actually sitting in a room with Moose and writing. So, but I got to sing this one, and it's one of my favorite songs that we do live. So yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. This was amazing. Harmony, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it, and I appreciate you making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment. Thank you, and good luck with the residency at the Sphere, which is super exciting.
Thanks.
I know you need to get off to rehearsal, but I'm sure that's going to be just a blast for you and obviously the audiences.
It's going to be great. Yeah, actually, our first show is tomorrow.
Yeah, outstanding. Outstanding. Audience, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to nationally touring bassist and vocalist Harmony Kelly. Visit her official website at harmonykelly.com. As I mentioned before, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Find, follow, and engage with Harmony on social media. At the bottom of her website, you will see links for Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. I followed her on Instagram this morning. I know she would appreciate you doing the same. Do tell her that you heard her on Now Hear This Entertainment. Look also for a logo, a link for some music she has posted on SoundCloud, which is one of the platforms that this podcast is available on. Remember as well about soundbetter.com, which is a website that you can find Harmony on to make contact about possibly hiring her to play on your next project. And as you just heard, tomorrow night, Thursday, May 22nd, starts the first of at least 15 dates that Kenny Chesney is doing out at the Sphere in Las Vegas. That will do it for episode 588. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Rosie and the Revival. This is the one that Harmony just talked about. It's called Just Getting Started.
my motor.